now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and all the cheese in between. The movies are B, the entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Jason Jacquinet, and this time out, I'm going to talk about Quentin Tarantino's eighth movie. That's right, The Hateful Eight. And we'll get to it right after this.
Got room for one more? They call him the hangman. When the handbill says dead or alive, the rest of us just shoot you in the back, come up on top of a perch somewhere, and bring you in dead over a saddle. But when John Roof the hangman catches you, you hang.
Get in, boys!
This here is Daisy Domergue. She's wanted dead or alive for murder. When that sun comes out, I'm taking this woman to hang. Is there anybody here committed to stopping me from doing that?
Well, well, well. Looks like Minnie's haberdashery is about to get cozy for the next few days.
Yes, it does.
One of them fellas is not what he says he is.
Move a little strange, you're gonna get a bullet. Not a warning, not a question, a bullet.
Now we're talking.
The Hateful Eight was released at the Cinerama Dome on December 7th, 2015, and then Christmas in the United States. Now, there's two different versions of this. There's the Roadshow version, which ran 187 minutes that had intermission, and it had it's just more, obviously, and it was shown in a roadshow designed to be a bigger-than-life kind of thing. Very Quentin Tarantino-like. And then the general release is 168 minutes. Your budget was $44 to $62 million with a $161.2 million return in the U.S. Of course, your director is Quentin Tarantino. If you don't know who Quentin Tarantino is, I don't think that me telling you right now is going to somehow like, oh, yeah, that guy. Like, this is his eighth film, and that's what it's billed as, his eighth film. Obviously, we know that there are, he would have done, he did Death Proof and stuff like that as well, which some may, or, you know, there's some controversy about what counts as just his films and not his films and whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The whole idea is that it's Tarantino, so you know, you kind of know what you're getting into. Your producers here are Richard Gladstein, Stacey Shear, and Shannon McIntosh. I'm going to say this because some people are going to get mad. But this was the last film that he made for the Weinstein Company before all that stuff came out. So chill out. No one is looking for any of you running your cake holes about this right now. We got it. No one likes the Weinsteins anymore. It's fine. I'm just saying, this was made before that. It can't change the fact that that's the company who made it. There we go. Now I've said it, so now you can just, if you really want to get pissy about it, then go listen to another podcast, because I don't need you here doing that with me. Anyway, so, like any other Tarantino movie, he has got it packed to the gills with amazing actors. Here we got Samuel L. Jackson, Kurt Russell, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Walter Goggins, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen, Bruce Dern, Channing Tatum, James Park, and Damian Bashir. Now, there's some other people too, but obviously those, that's the who's who of who you could get. And if you ever think about Tarantino movies, he's got them loaded with the best actors he can get, people who are his friends, people who work together. Samuel L. Jackson is known for working with Quentin Tarantino, going all the way back to obviously to Pulp Fiction. Tim Roth was in Reservoir Dogs. Michael Madsen's in Reservoir Dogs, etc., etc., etc. Okay. Anyway, cinematographer is Robert Richardson. Editor is Fred Raskin, and Ennio Morricone did the music. And the music and the scenery in this movie has to be seen to be understood. Not just like the story wise. I'm saying is the visuals are just stunning in this movie, and the music is just amazing. So, all right, I just want to talk about some of these things first before we get too deep into it. This movie was announced in November of 2013, and it was originally conceived as a sequel to Django Unchained, but then decided to make it a standalone. Sometime around January of 2014, the script was leaked, and he decided to try to publish it as a novel instead. There was a live reading. There's a whole bunch of stuff that goes on with it. The idea is that Tarantino really didn't want to make this movie anymore once someone leaked his script. And then changes happened, and like some of the people involved in it were like, oh man, this is going to be really good. You should really just make this. But it isn't me. The score, or Morricone won his only Academy Award for Best Original Score after this. He had been nominated 5 previous times. This is also the first Western score he had done in 34 years. But things are a little different nowadays at the Academy. They're willing to recognize genre pictures sometimes instead of just like, you know, everything has to be a drama or it's written off. The film also earned nominations for Best Supporting Actor for Lee and Best Cinematography for Richardson. The extended version, which I have never seen, actually, I've only seen the regular version, cut into a 4-part miniseries on Netflix, and extended, it still tell the extended version, The Hateful Eight, obviously, because that was, and it was a miniseries. They don't have it anymore. I did not see that. That restores about 26 minutes worth of, material put back in, but it isn't me. Anyway, let's just kind of get rolling on this. Here we go. In 1877, this is about 10 years after the end of the Civil War, so give you an idea what we're talking about. Bounty hunter and Union Army veteran, cavalryman Major Marquis Warren, that's Samuel L. Jackson, heads to the Red Rock, Wyoming territory with three corpses on his horse. His horse gives out and dies in the middle of a blizzard, or the oncoming blizzard. So facing the blizzard, Warren hitches a ride on the stagecoach driven by O.B. Jackson, right? And then aboard the stagecoach is John Ruth, the hangman. That is Kurt Russell, all right? And he's handcuffed to a fugitive known as Crazy Daisy Domergook. And that's Jennifer Jason Leigh. Now, it's Jennifer Jason Leigh. My wife came in, she goes, who is that? And because she don't look anything like Jennifer Jason Leigh right now. She is disgusting. And Kurt Russell is sporting I know he's had some facial hair and other things, but like I'm thinking like the thing with the beard, but like the facial hair he's got going on here is something else. Anyway. Warren and Ruth had previously bonded over Warren's personal letter from Abraham Lincoln. Chris Mannix, who is Walter Goggins, whose father led a lost causer militia called Mannix Marauders, is claiming to be the new sheriff of Red Rock. They run into him as well. And it's funny because it's a blizzard. And Kurt Russell's character, Roth, goes, it's kind of funny that there's two guys out. There's a lot of people walking around in a blizzard for it to be a coincidence. And everything in this movie seems like, oh, what a coincidence. But nothing is a coincidence. Except the things that are, but that are red herrings to make you believe that other things are not. Anyway. So they take him in, and obviously Mannix and Major Warren really don't like each other. You know, kind of thing. One guy killed, one guy fought for the South and killed, especially African-Americans and stuff like that. And the other guy fought for the North and is African-American. So you can only imagine what that's going to be like. So during the trip, Ruth learns about the Confederate bounty on Warren's head for breaking out and setting fire to a prisoner of war camp where he killed, you killed like 37 Confederate soldiers, but he wound up killing like 20 something also Union prisoners as well. Anyway, they seek refuge from the blizzard at Minnie's Haberdashery, which is tended by Bob, who's a Mexican, who's been told to watch the haberdashery while Minnie and her husband, Sweet Dave, are off seeing her mother on the other side of the valley. The lodge shelters local hangmen. There's people inside. And we learn that they are reported to be the local hangman, Oswaldo Marbury, a cowboy named Joe Gage. So Oswaldo Marbury is Tim Roth. Now, I know people had thought, why is Christoph Waltz not playing that role? I don't know, but he's not. But it definitely works with Tim Roth. And then Joe Gage is Michael Madsen. And the Confederate general sitting there is Sanford Smithers, who is played by Bruce Dern. Who's planning to erect so he's out there looking for his missing son, Chester Charles. So suspicious, obviously, because it's kind of a lot of people at the haberdashery and they're going to be stuck there in this blizzard. Ruth disarms Warren, all but Warren, because they've now made a deal. Warren's got about $8,000 worth of dead corpses that he's bringing in for bounties. And Ruth's, has got $10,000 in the live one, which is Jason Jennifer Lee, which is Daisy Domerduke, hooked to his chain to him. Where was he? So while Mannix is views Smithers as a war hero, Warren wants him dead as revenge for ordering the execution of black prisoners at the war at Baton Rouge. During dinner, Mannix surmises that the Lincoln letter is fake. Warren responds to Ruth's disappointment by saying he forged a letter. The forged letter buys him leeway with whites, which is part of all this kind of thing. Which I could see where this would have been, not the exact story, but I could see where this have come in at the idea of being a Django Unchained sequel. After some small talk, Warren puts one of his guns next to Smithers and tells him he knew his son, claiming that Smithers' son had tried to claim a bounty in his head and that he had... this is a family show, so we can't say this part, but let's say did some really horrible things, made him do some really horrible things to him before he murdered him. And then when Smithers reaches for the gun, Warren shoots him dead. During the confrontation, the coffee is poisoned, which Daisy silently witnesses. Ruth and OB drink the coffee after they come back from outside. OB dies by vomiting up blood in his intestines and everything else. And Ruth is in the middle of vomiting all that up too, where Daisy kills him with his own gun after they fall to the floor. Warren disarms Daisy, leaving her shackled to Ruth's corpse, and holds the other at gunpoint except Mannix, who nearly drank the poison coffee himself. Mannix suspects Gage poisoned the coffee, while Warren deduces with evidence that Bob is lying about looking after the haberdashery and kills him. Now, you can't talk about Quentin Tarantino movies sometimes in a family-friendly environment because of the stuff that's in there. Mimi, who we don't at this point know is African-American, but you kind of can deduce she's African-American, had a sign over the bar that said, "No dogs or Mexicans allowed." And then Samuel Jackson's character says she took it down a couple years ago because she started allowing dogs in. So it's very weird that a Mexican would be there, you know, running this place while Mimi, who is severely racist, would have not allowed him in the place anyway. But it also comes down to the stew. There's a lot of talk about stew in this, where, you know, it's funny because Warren says, "I've had my mama's stew, I had this other guy's stew, but this is Mimi's stew, and this stew was made today, and there's no way she's on the side of this." So it's, you know, you kind of, you as the viewer are figuring these things out. It's not like it's super, super deep, you can't figure it out, but you're never 100% sure who's telling the truth and who's lying, which is the big part of this. That Bob is lying, looking after Hector kills him. When Warren threatens to kill Daisy, Gage admits that he poisoned the coffee. An unknown man hiding under the floorboard shoots Warren in the groin, and Morberry and Mannix shoot and wound one another. So the guy now we go to the flashback. So the shots come up from under the ground. You're like, what is going on? Because now we see what happens. So a flashback shows Bob, Marbury, Gage, and Daisy's brother Jody arriving at the lodge hours earlier. They kill Mimi, Sweet Dave, and all the employees, but spare Smithers, who is already there to create a believable setting in the exchange for his silence. Once they finish hiding the bodies and cleaning the store and hiding the weapons for future use, Jody hid in the cellar as Ruth, Daisy, OB, Warren, and Mannix arrived. Back to the present. Warren and Mannix, both seriously wounded, hold Daisy, Gage, and Marbury at gunpoint. When they threaten to kill Daisy, Jody surrenders, and as he comes up, he looks at his sister, and Warren blows his head completely off, just blows his face completely off, and all of it goes right in Jennifer Jason Leigh's face, in her mouth, and her hair. Oh, it's just crazy. I mean, again, these movies are not for everybody. I get that, but this, I mean, I love Tarantino movies. So the surviving gang members claim that 15 hired guns are waiting in Red Rock and offer a deal. If Mannix kills Warren, they will spare him and allow him to collect the bounty on the dying Marbury and the deceased Bob, whose real name is revealed as English Pete Hickok and Marco the Mexican are their actual names, not what they're lying to be. Warren kills Hickok when he tries to persuade Mannix. Warren and Mannix then kill Gage, whose real name is Grouch Douglas, when he grabs a pistol under the table. Mannix hears Daisy's proposal, but decides she's lying. When Mannix faints from blood loss, Daisy chops off Ruth's arm and goes for the gun. This is crazy. She is literally hacking his arm with a machete. Kelly came in at the very end of it. She's like, "What are you watching?" I go, "Just down, shut up and watch this." It's just insane. Now, she's seen Tarantino movies, so she knows what she's getting into, but she had never seen this one, and it's just nuts. Where were you? Mannix and Warren. Okay, so, but Mannix reawakens and wounds her. Mannix and Warren hang Daisy from the rafters in honor of Ruth, who always brought his bounties to the gallows, which earned him the nickname the Hangman. As they lay dying, Mannix reads aloud Warren's fake Lincoln letter, complimenting its details. This movie, don't get me wrong. I'm trying to think. I mean, I don't think there's a Tarantino movie I don't like. There's some I like less than others, which is just fine. But, like, this movie is nuts. It's like, you literally, I mean, if you're not paying attention all the time, you miss stuff. And you miss stuff even if you are paying attention. But there's so many little things and so many nods to different movies and different people and different times. And yes, they use the N-word a lot, but they use that N-word a lot in that time as well, you know, kind of thing. And they use a lot of it in Django and stuff. It is, like I said, not every movie is going to play well for everybody. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who are quote unquote triggered by what's happening in this film. But this is roughly 10 years after the Civil War. Like, remember, the South, even though they lost, a lot of them didn't believe they lost. Like, this isn't just as simple as just, oh, well, you know, everything was hunky-dory after it was done. There was a lot of stuff still going on. And honestly, you know, I understand it's a fictitious story, but, like, some of these things are probably a lot more true than you would think. So, let's see. Like I said, Hateful Eight grossed $54.1 million in the U.S. and Canada, and $107 million in other countries, $161 million worldwide. The film went on to gross $15.7 in its opening weekend, finishing third at the box office behind Star Wars The Force Awakens and Daddy's Home. Which, again, I mean, I know Haley likes Daddy's Home. I am not a fan of Daddy's Home. And Star Wars The Force Awakens, which was fine. I know you're not supposed to like any of those movies, which was fine. This movie is still better. But be that as it may. I don't know. I'm not sure how else to describe this. I mean, I've told you what's happening here, but you gotta... I don't know. I mean, this movie made so many people's top 10 list of the year. It's just unbelievable. Anytime a Tarantino movie comes out, I'm always excited to see it. Like, it's because I like him as a director. I know some people, I know you're not supposed to. I know that's the thing. You're not supposed to like Tarantino as a director. You're not supposed to like Robert Rodriguez. You're not supposed to like these people because, oh, they don't make real movies. I don't know what some people are looking for. This to me is, I mean, it's certainly not for everyone. Let me just say that from jump. There's a lot of language that people might find offensive. There's a lot of killing, like a lot of killing in it. But nothing here is so egregious that I couldn't sit through the movie, right? Kind of thing. So, and it's enjoyable as heck. I mean, that's the whole thing. I find Tarantino movies usually so engrossing that I get so caught up in what's happening that it's very easy for me to, you know, lose a couple hours watching it. And that's one of the things I can say too. And again, like I said, Kelly didn't watch this with me, but Kelly watched like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And she's like, I don't know about this movie. I'm like, just trust me, just watch it. You know, it's DiCaprio. It's, you know, it's Brad Pitt, which a lot of people already are like, ew, really? And Margot Robbie. And that movie is phenomenally good. And my wife was like, holy cow, that was so good. I'm like, I told you, right? I mean, she loved Inglourious Basterds. She didn't love the language sometimes in Django Unchained, but she loved that. And I keep telling her, I go, these stories are so captivating. They're going to pull you in, right? And let's be honest, like, you know, if I'm going to spend 2.5 hours watching a movie, I don't want to be bored. There's nothing boring in this. You know, some people might say, oh, well, I would cut this or I would cut that. Okay, great. I'm glad you think you know better. But it's the movie that we have, right? You know, kind of thing. And I'm hard-pressed to ever find any movie that is absolutely perfect. I mean, I'm thinking of Aliens as pretty dang almost perfect, you know, kind of thing. Very few things you can argue with that. But, or like The Thing, Carpenter's The Thing. But the thing at the end of the day is these movies are entertaining. This came out at Christmas. I'm sure, you know, you didn't just go see it on a whim. I'm sure people went to go see this because they were like, oh, I want to see the new Tarantino movie. Yes, there's an audience built in for Tarantino, 100%. I'm part of that audience, right? I mean, I was there opening weekend for Kill Bill Part 1, and then I couldn't wait to see Kill Bill Part 2, right? Those are the kind of things. And I was not an earlier adopter of being a Tarantino guy. I had seen Pulp Fiction in college. I had never seen Reservoir Dogs at that point. I thought Pulp Fiction is fine, and I still think Pulp Fiction is fine. I don't think it's the masterpiece that everyone kind of made it out to be. But that's a different story for a different day. And then my buddy John was like, hey, we got to watch Reservoir Dogs. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, this I love. This is amazing. And then when I was then obviously, you know, I mean, Kill Bill Part 1, I think is so much better than Kill Bill Part 2, but that's a different story. But like, you know, whether you like his movies or not, like, you know, people hate on Jackie Brown. Like, Jackie Brown's a really good movie. But is it a movie I want to throw on a whim? No, I'm not going to throw on Jackie Brown. I got to want to watch Jackie Brown. If I catch it, I might watch 10 to 15 minutes of it. But it's not a movie where I'm thinking, like, I want to watch it. But that's because, not because it's poorly made, because that's the type of movie it is. It's you know, that 70s, you know, kind of heist movie kind of thing. Like, this is, he makes different films, you know, kind of thing. And I understand that that's not everyone's cup of tea. They'd rather have somebody who makes the same cookie cutter thing. And if that's what you like, great. Don't worry, man. There's plenty of Fast and Furious and Transformers and all those other movies that are very much the same. And it's not a knock on those movies because they make insane amounts of money. But there's a lot of those movies that are all kind of cookie-cuttered. You know, John Wick hits as a movie, which is supposed to be just some little movie. And now John Wick is like a whole category of movies. And I love John Wick. And I love the sequels. And I love Nobody. And I love, like, but that wasn't a thing at first. No one's like, oh my God, John Wick's going to be this amazing, you know, moneymaker. It just hit. And the thing with Tarantino is that you're going to get one of a film. You're not going to get that. This actually could have been a sequel to Django, would have been nuts for the idea that, like, him making a sequel? You know, I mean, people are like, well, what about Kill Bill? Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2 are one movie that was cut in half and recut to make it two films. If you didn't know that, sorry to burst your bubble, but where you been for like the last 20 plus years? Anyway, so is Hateful Eight really as good as people said it is? I think this would have been one of my favorite movies of 2015, right? Kind of thing. I didn't see it in 2015, but I'm saying this is a solid movie. It's not very funny. I can say that there's not a lot of humor in this one, but it's well acted, wall to wall well acted. The visuals alone on the exteriors and the music and everything are phenomenal. But the Woody Call is also great too. The costuming is good. It's a movie that is bigger than its four walls, so to speak. They're in the haberdashery for most of the movie, but it feels so much bigger. And I'm sure if you saw it in the Roadshow on the 70mm, it would feel even bigger than that. So, I know we don't talk a lot of Westerns here. We should, though, probably, but I don't really. The problem is the Westerns I like are not necessarily the Westerns that anyone else, want to hear about on Boss Bugs and Babes. I mean, there's only so many times you can talk about Silverado or Tombstone. Don't get me wrong. I love both those movies, but both those movies are a little bigger than the B movies of the, of most cowboy movies, the vast majority of them anyway, or especially the spaghetti Westerns. But this movie does bring two other Bs to the table. It brings bounty hunters and bullets. Lots and lots and lots of bullets to the table. So not just the triple B here. This is the penta B kind of thing. You know, like you got five Bs going on here. But yeah, I know this is not really very B, but it again, Westerns kind of are. And this is more than just a Western, but it's whatever kind of thing. Did you like Hateful Eight? Is it one of your favorite Tarantinos? Are you more of the mindset that, you know, this was like one of the ones that you just kind of didn't enjoy? Because I know there's a lot of people who don't like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. People just don't like it. I don't understand why. I don't know what movie they watched, because the movie I watched was phenomenal. This movie was great. This movie is violent as heck. I get it. And maybe that's why you don't like it. Is that the case? If it is, let me know. You know, kind of thing. Like if you're saying, hey, Jay, there's just too much violence. There's just, they use the N-word too much. When John Roth is punching Daisy right in the face. Like, I mean, she gets hit. I'm not saying he really hit her. I'm not saying Kurt Russell actually hit Jennifer Jason Leigh. Let's make sure we're all very clear on that, because people take things out of context, because that's how people are, right? But in the movie, that's what happened. And she got punched in the face. So she got elbow in the face. She got a black eye. Like but she's also the leader of a gang that murders people. So it fits in the way the story goes. Anyway. All right, folks. Yeah. So like I said, Hateful Eight, what's your thoughts on it? Do you like it? Are you a Tarantino guy or, girl or whatever? I'm not saying it has to be a guy. Do you look forward to his movies? Do you not like his movies? You know, are you one of the people who was like, yeah, I liked Pulp Fiction, but I didn't like anything after that? You know, are you more like a later one when his movies are more polished, like Inglourious Basterds and stuff like that? Or are you more the raw kind of thing? I personally love Reservoir Dogs. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. But I also really love Inglourious Basterds. And I really love, Inglourious Basterds. It's just got so many funny parts to it, too. And it's horrible because it's about Nazis and killing people and stuff. But, like, there's just funny stuff in there. Especially Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's awesome in that movie. Anyway, not this movie. This movie, I mean, everyone here is just doing the best. They're acting the hell out of it. Everyone's great. So well worth your time. All right, folks. So, now that we're into the middle, then getting into the middle of the summer here, what's coming up. I don't want to ruin what's coming up at the end of the month, but in August, I'm doing Friday the 13th Part 7. I'm doing that. It's one of it's literally my favorite Friday the 13th of all time. It's Jason versus Carrie, even if they call her Tina, right? So that's coming. So hopefully you're going to enjoy what's coming down the pipe. Hopefully you enjoyed what came before. Again, comments and questions or whatever, just email me. I would love to hear from you guys. So, and I'd like to also thank everyone for all the support and love. Especially, it's hard. I mean, you guys have heard me say it in here. I don't know if I'm just yelling into the ether anymore. I'm just, I feel like sometimes I'm an old man tilting at windmills to take a Don Quixote thing. That I think that's part of what it is. And if it turns out that people don't want to hear me yabber anymore, I can just not do this. But I think there are still people who enjoy kind of my take on things, and, you know, me just kind of maybe looking at movies that, again, that we haven't seen in a while, or maybe new things along those lines. Anyway, so folks, so like we say, keep those cards and letters coming, and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc., are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?